In the hot, sticky August of 2017, a select group of the world's leading behavioural scientists gathered in Chicago. Their task? To tackle some very ancient questions with some very modern tools. What is wisdom? Can it be measured? And critically, how do we develop it? Boarding a plane with microphone in hand, I went to Chicago to find answers to these questions, to pick the brains of these wise experts, and to hit the city streets to learn what the people of Chicago have to tell us about living wisely in the modern world.
What you go through, you know what I'm saying, and you learn from it, that's what makes you wise.
You know, it's sad, but a lot of times going through more difficult things are what lead people, it can go either way. Going through difficult things leads people to closing off more, or it leads people to opening their perspectives.
At a point when wisdom in public life seems more essential than ever, the emerging field of wisdom research aims to uncover the science of how the internal mechanics of wisdom actually work, how we might take wiser decisions in our personal lives, and how we might even build a wiser society.
More people are jumping on board with the study of wisdom from different disciplines. And I think that's because of the world we live in and the problems we face. People are recognizing that smart people, smart leaders, are getting us into trouble. Smart leaders aren't making wise decisions.
If you don't believe in gender equality, just believe this. It will make you wiser to have more women on board.
Our technological capacities are advancing far faster than some of our other capacities. And so we have a desperate need for practical wisdom in this world today, and we don't have a lot of time to figure that out.
For centuries, wisdom has been the preserve of philosophy and religion and has lacked rigorous definition. In the Buddhist tradition, it's framed as the distinguishing of thoughts and deeds that contribute to authentic happiness from those that destroy it. Christians, meanwhile, describe wisdom as profound understanding of life granted by God. Over the last 40 years, however, wisdom has begun to make its way into science departments across the globe. Psychologists are finding that societies do share an agreed understanding of wisdom, and beyond that, they're finding the pursuit of knowledge without wisdom doesn't seem to provide us with the answers that we're looking for. Here's behavioral neuroscientist Greg Norman from the University of Chicago.
I think in the past it wasn't focused on as much in the scientific literature because there wasn't this much of a tension or a pressing need for the dissociation between knowledge versus wisdom, and I think now people might be paying more attention because everyone that's really collecting data on a large scale is running into this problem, whether we're talking about molecular biology all the way up to kind of, you know, population surveys. It's the same problems repeating itself, and something like wisdom is going to come into play and figure out what to do with it.
My background's in physics, so I very much believe in the pursuit of knowledge, mostly leaving talk of wisdom to the philosophers. If something can't be measured, my eyes rapidly glaze over and I become a little skeptical. But what if something as valuable as wisdom can be measured? Might a scientific understanding of wisdom help us make better decisions in our personal lives, and maybe even help us build wiser societies? I've recently become more and more fascinated by this prospect, and according to Heather Harden-Mangelsdorf, a doctoral candidate at the University of Chicago, wisdom most definitely merits this growing scientific attention.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with our current kind of social and political times, right? Our country seems increasingly divided, and it seems like there's a lot of growing social issues that as a society we're trying to solve. And so this seems like a particularly good time to think about wisdom and particularly educating the next generation to hopefully become wiser and make wiser decisions and kind of wiser in their social interactions and relating to each other.
The Fall and Rise of Wisdom is an enlightening tale. In the ancient world, wisdom was considered the pinnacle of human experience. Philosophers, lovers of wisdom, considered it the path to a meaningful life. The scientific revolution of the 18th century saw our greatest thinkers embrace the study of things that can be measured, and wisdom was largely left to the philosophers. As psychology then sought to establish itself as a serious scientific discipline in the 19th century, intangible internal constructs such as wisdom were once again left behind, a process that continued with behaviorism until the mid-20th century. Wisdom, once humanity's most valued prize, was now many steps removed from science.
In the wisdom literature that goes back to the early days of humankind, you will find that wisdom is reserved for a few. in a given society.
In the mid-1950s, the cognitive revolution had reclaimed the study of mental processes. The growth of social psychology, and later behavioral economics, allowed for the study of what might constitute wise behavior, managing uncertainty and risk, considering multiple perspectives, judgment and decision making. Wisdom was being approached once again, though cautiously from the edges. In the late 1970s, psychologists started to ask new questions. Do we continue to develop after reaching adulthood? Is aging only about decline, or might some facilities actually bloom in the autumn years? Is there a peak state that humans grow towards over the course of their lives? These questions led to the completion of the circle. Wisdom was back on the agenda. It was wisdom's return from the wilderness.
Most generally, I think that wisdom is a rare and extraordinary form of human development. I think more specifically that I would view wisdom as a body of experience-based knowledge concerning human life and living, how to live.
A team in Berlin did the first empirical work on wisdom in the early 1980s, defining wisdom as expertise in the fundamental pragmatics of life. Their careful and extensive early work, led by Paul Bountes, laid the scientific groundwork for the new field. Leading intelligence expert Robert Sternberg, meanwhile, was frustrated with our educational systems and soon added the should aspect to wisdom, suggesting that wisdom involved harnessing intelligence for the common good. Soon afterwards, Monica Ardelt took this further, suggesting that wisdom involved the interaction of not just reflective and cognitive components, but also a compassionate dimension.
You often got a little bit of a, well, that sounds very new agey, which doesn't seem to be the case anymore. So wisdom research has really increased its reputation.
In 2007, the University of Chicago launched the first of a series of large-scale programs to support and disseminate wisdom research at an international level. Here's Margaret Plouzogan from University of Virginia's School of Medicine.
I think we're also making so much progress in neuroscience and in the science of emotion that studying these difficult, messy topics like love and compassion and how we think don't feel quite so impossible as they did maybe 20 years ago.
Once a year, leading researchers from across the globe gather in Chicago to continue charting this new landscape and lay the foundations of an emerging new field. I became fascinated by the field of wisdom research in 2015 and had been doing my bit to share the research as widely as possible ever since. But I still had many questions. If I wanted answers to these questions, it was time to board a plane to Chicago.
Welcome aboard our flight to Chicago. O'Hare International Airport should be departing the gate shortly. Looks like everything's running according to schedule, so...
Arriving in downtown Chicago, I felt an immediate smack of recognition. The city has a rich and lively history, home to both Barack Obama and Al Capone. And for anyone familiar with the new Batman films, you can't escape the feeling that you are walking into the heart of Gotham City.
Who's wise? I think a guy who made up Uber and Lyft is pretty wise. That's a good idea. I wish I did it. We're not supposed to do this and drive. This is illegal.
Today, Chicago is at the cutting edge of a new frontier of science. Following the launch of the Defining Wisdom Project in 2007 and the Wisdom Research Project in 2012, the University of Chicago opened the Center for Practical Wisdom in 2015, the first of its kind in the world.
I'm Howard Nussbaum. I'm a professor of psychology at the University of Chicago, and I'm the director of the Center for Practical Wisdom.
The stated aim of the center is to understand how to gain, reinforce, and apply wisdom in order to help create wiser individuals, institutions, and societies. The center now hosts the field's pioneers once a year at its annual Wisdom Research Forum, and it was this gathering that had drawn me to Chicago. The evening before the forum began, I sat down with the center's director, Howard Nussbaum. I was intrigued to know what it was like to work in such a new field.
What reaction do you get when you tell people, if you meet them at a dinner party, and say, what do you do, and you say that you study wisdom? How does that normally go over?
What I typically get is curiosity and interest. People are interested in wisdom, and I think they're interested in it because I usually start with this contrast that there's a difference between being smart and being wise, and that really is goes back to Bob Sternberg and others.
Researchers frequently point out that wise people are typically smart, but smart people are not necessarily wise. In psychology, they would say intelligence is necessary but not sufficient for wisdom. This implies that somehow wisdom sits above mere intelligence, which resonates with many people's intuitions about wisdom. Other research indicates that intelligence can be used to promote selfish interests, whilst wisdom employs intelligence in pursuit of the common good. It only takes a quick review of the notorious Enron scandal to conclude that the difference between intelligence and wisdom is in fact quite stark. I asked Professor Nussbaum for a heads up on what I could expect to witness when the world's leading wisdom researchers gather in one room.
So at this particular meeting, one of the things we're going to talk about is that notion of wisdom impact. What can wisdom research do to affect things in the world? And to talk about wisdom research and education. Those conversations are also important.
The Center for Practical Wisdom was launched with a large investment from the John Templeton Foundation. I was interested to know what hopes the foundation had for the field and what it was about wisdom itself that had captured their attention. Here's Barnaby Marsh from the foundation on the phone from New York.
I think there's tremendous public interest in wisdom, yet it's very difficult to define. Scholars around the world, including scientists, have been building our store of knowledge and understanding, but it's not clear that we're becoming wiser as a result. And that's one of the things that prompted us to make this big investment in new wisdom research.
At this point, there are three big questions facing the researchers. How do you define wisdom? How do you measure wisdom? And how can you develop wisdom? After chatting with Howard Nussbaum, I retired to my room for the evening. Looking at the program for the next day's activities, I see presentations titled, Wise But Unhappy, Can Wisdom Be Enhanced? And Wisdom, Balance and Bias. If I was going to find answers to these questions anywhere, it seems it would be here, in the city of Chicago.